Jaguar Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello, and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And we are back with our final episode before kickoff of the 2013 season. John, what are you thinking right now?
I'm excited because it's finally game week.
After
months of off-season and waiting all summer for something to actually happen, and a few days from now, we'll have real Auburn football to talk about.
It's amazing. I love that we spent weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks waiting to have what we knew was going to happen with the quarterback situation confirmed. Now, there was a little drama earlier in the week before we found out who the quarterback was going to be that we already knew. And we'll get to that in just a minute. But so there, it was a little more interesting than maybe it could have been. But ultimately, it was rather anticlimactic, would you say?
It was still exciting.
Well, yeah.
I got to be honest, a bit a little too exciting. I could do with one quarterback winning the job and keeping it for a couple of years.
Yeah, it's amazing how many years. I mean, the last year that we had a returning quarterback that was a starter, guaranteed, you know, pretty much solid, was, I guess, Brandon Cox back in 06-07, right?
That's been a while.
And in 07, Cody Burns split time with him a little bit, you know, especially toward the end. So, yeah, it's been a while. Well, we have a number of things to talk about in what is essentially kind of our season preview. You know, I think we should probably first remind folks, if they don't know already, that the first installment of our SEC season preview is up now at the WarEagleReader.com, where we previewed the East. And our SEC West preview should be along in the next Monday. It should be along Monday, Tuesday. John did his part already. I'm putting the final touches on my part, and I'll have it off to the War Eagle Reader in the next 24 hours at the most, I would think. And then we'll do an Auburn preview, right? And then we have and the Washington State preview. So we're going to be bombarding you both auditorily and in print for the next few days. And I guess just kind of in a random order here while I'm talking about it, while we are bombarding you with podcasts and printed articles on the web and our book, which we'll get to again as we always do, we also are going to be seeing you in person if you are at the first couple of football games. What will you be doing Washington State week, John?
At the Washington State game, I will be the guest of the Auburn University bookstore in Haley Center, and they will be hosting me for a book signing starting at 2 p.m. Central Time on game day afternoon. I'll be there at a table somewhere in the bookstore, I'm not sure where, signing books. Anybody comes by, if you've already bought one, you want me to sign it. If you want to buy one, that's great. If you have questions or suggestions or comments, I'd love to meet people, talk about it. And if you know, also because I'll be there that week, the next week somebody else will be there.
Yeah, I'll be there on Arkansas State week. I'm coming down on Friday with my older daughter, and we're going to have a good time, and my sister will be along too. And we'll be going to the game. And fortunately, both games are 6:30-ish. And so you and I both, John, will have time each weekend, you know, each Saturday.
Sure.
Bump around a little bit and then have our signing and then have the game, you know, after that. So the timing, I think, is really good. And I hope folks will take advantage of that and come out and see one or both of us and just talk a little bit and chat. That'll be fun.
It'll be exciting.
And I really...
I was going to say the same thing as you. We appreciate the Auburn University Bookstore doing that.
Absolutely.
If even if you aren't able to come by, don't forget you are able to check out our book. It's on Amazon. It's in the Auburn University Bookstore. It should be in some of the other local bookstores in the Auburn area.
Yeah. Oh, very excited about that. It's spreading and just getting bigger and bigger, and I'm very excited. Let's see. There's one other, and I'm sorry we're having to some business to take care of here before we really get into talking about the season and the team. But there's one other sort of unexpected, recent, sudden development. John and I cannot tell you a lot about it now, but depending on when you hear this, there may be more news out there. All I can tell you is that within the last week or so, thanks to the good offices of some of the folks over at the AL.com Auburn podcast, the Matt Scalise and Warbloggle and Blake L's show, through Blake's good offices, we have become associated with something called, I think I'm able to tell you to go to WarEagleSportsRadio.com. WarEagleSportsRadio.com. I like the sound of that, don't you, John?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and so there's some really good news coming along as far as that goes. There's a Twitter account called War Eagle Radio, at War Eagle Radio. I haven't even followed it yet, I don't think, but I'm about to. And so we should have some interesting information maybe later this week. We're just having to be careful because the people that are behind all this just want to make sure all the ducks are in a row and all the technical, you know, difficulties are ironed out, everything's lined up, and then there'll be news, hopefully, about a brand new way to listen to the Wishbone podcast, and I'm very excited and very thankful about that. Is there any other preliminary matters that we need to get to?
No, I think so. Let's talk about football.
All right. Well, you know, I've got actually a couple of random tidbits to throw in that are Auburn related, and they're not about us. They're about Auburn. Just some things I gathered up this week watching the news, the Auburn news and Twitter. One is that Auburn was named the number 3, I believe, student section in the U.S., by some organization or other on the internet. Did you see that?
I did, and I probably should have been number 1, but that's fair.
And then I got in an argument with somebody on Twitter who said that Auburn shouldn't have even been listed at all and blah, 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 blah. And his position was, well, don't take it personally. I'm like, take it personally. I was in that space for 7 years. Of course I'm going to take it personally. I was a contributing member of that student section for quite a long time. Longer, you know, you were too, but I was there a long time because I ended up back, you know, graduate school. So
I don't think they're basing that ranking on anything that you did in the student section.
Yeah, it's a bit more recent probably. They're not going to go back to the 80s and early 90s to get that information. Another thing is that Auburn was named the number 1 tailgating school in the entire country by Yahoo. What do you think of that?
That surprises me. I mean, a lot of people tailgate, and the tailgating is really good at Auburn. But it does surprise me a little bit. I mean, there's all these other schools where they – tailgating is a little fancier, I think. You got the Ole Miss UVA route where they pull out the white cloth tablecloths and that kind of thing.
Candelabras.
But then there's plenty of other schools with great tailgating around the country that are, you know, so it's an honor. But I'm not surprised. I think the tailgating in Auburn is pretty good. But
well, LSU has a bone to pick, I think, and I understand that because – You know, somebody said that LSU like should have a contract with the Food Network for their tailgating. You know, just
sure.
All the bizarre things they cook, you know.
Sure.
They cook things at tailgating that you wouldn't even really like. You'd probably run if you saw it walking towards you in the street. So, but anyway, I think that part of it is just the strength of that the RVs show up on Tuesday sometime and the tailgating goes for days and days and days. So, but that's probably true of these other places too. So. And the third thing, which is sort of a football factoid that I came across, I put this together from some numbers that I saw. You know, we look back on the 2010 defense and we say, yeah, you know, the defense wasn't that great, blah, 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 blah. But do you know that in the 7 years that the SEC has won the BCS in a row, in those 7 years, Auburn's 2010 defense gave up 1.3 points more than the average of those 7 games.
So in the title game?
Yeah, in the title game. If you took the average of all seven games, Auburn's was 1.3 above the median or whatever.
That doesn't mean they were as good at defenses as their defenses, though.
Well, but it was against not only was our defense that play that well, but it was against possibly the best offensive team of all 7 years.
Potentially, yes.
So, I was very pleased by that number. You know, maybe I'm giving it too much credence, but you know, that's pretty good to me.
It is good.
19 points. So, all right. Well, let's see. I think the first thing we probably need to talk about then is Nick Marshall and what he's all about and what we look for and expect from him over the next few months.
I guess the first thing is what he's not, and that he's not a big guy. Mm. He's not a bulldozer in the Cam, even Kyle Frazier mode, where he's going to run straight ahead and get first downs when it's third and two. He's a smaller, slighter guy, 6'1", 210. He may not even weigh that much. He's very quick. He's fast enough to play defensive back in the SEC. He's got a very strong arm. But I think, a lot of it is going to be early on, handing off, running the reverses and stuff, and then also doing the read option kind of stuff and keeping the ball on the outside, not so much running between the tackles. Mm-hmm. Doing that when the defense opens up, when they get the defense spread out and those kind of holes open up in the middle and he just tucks it and takes off, I think there's going to be some of that. I think he's going to be fast. I think he's going to pick up first downs with his feet, but he's not going to run over anybody. Mm-hmm. So with him not being as big, I do worry a little bit about him taking a pounding if we call the running plays a little too much. But the other thing is I think he's going to come out and throw the ball around. I think they're going to be a little conservative at first and not unleash the offense, but we're going to talk in a minute about the defense. I think Auburn's going to need to score some points, and I think he's going to come out and throw the ball, and he's going to be pretty successful at it.
You know, I think that if you're looking for a past Auburn quarterback comparison, this is not Cam, and it's not exact, but it's a lot closer in my mind to Damian Craig than to Cam.
That's exactly who I was going to say. He's not anywhere near the quarterback yet that he may never be that Craig was, but that physically they're more similar.
Yeah, smaller guy, quick, fast. He may be faster than Damian was.
Sure.
So, I guess we really, until we see him in action, we're just not going to know, what to expect. When Cam started, we had some video footage of him at Florida, running over Tennessee linebackers, and so you had a hint. You're kind of like, oh, I can kind of get a sense that this guy is powerful at least. But with Marshall, you kind of just have to imagine, a quarterback that's like was he run a 4.3, 4.4, something like that?
Mm-hmm. He's fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a little while we have our 10 observations we're going to go through. I'm going to go ahead and burn one of them, and we'll just skip through it later. And that is that I was going to say Nick Marshall is going to be unlike any quarterback that we've ever had. Like I said, he's closer to Damian than any other, but he's just pretty different. Not necessarily better, but just a different type of quarterback. And so it will be very interesting to see something new in the Auburn backfield that we really haven't seen before. And I don't think anybody fully knows what to expect, when he's back there. But I tell you, him avoiding turnovers in the camp really encouraged me, because that was the one big rap on him,
Absolutely. That is huge. The other thing, for the first time since I ever remember at an Auburn fall practice, the coaches allowed the quarterbacks to have that one scrimmage where they took the no-contact jerseys off and they said the quarterbacks are live, they could be hit. The defensive linemen could go after them. And that's the practice where supposedly Marshall really separated himself, where it wasn't two-hand touch anymore, where their other quarterbacks were getting hit and they were under pressure, and Marshall really made some plays. And I think that's one where he separated himself. So I'm glad that they did that. I'm glad they never did that when Cam Newton was there. And I think,
just imagine if they had.
Well, but I think that's part of the reason they didn't know what they had.
Right, right.
Because they hadn't gone through that. And so I think it's a question of this was a way to separate. We had four good contenders, and it was a way to separate them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just imagining what it would have been like if they told Cam, yeah, just, you know, act like it's LSU or something. Oh, my gosh. Had the be carting people off. Okay. Well, by I think that the writing sort of was appearing on the wall the week before they selected him. And one of the things that happened leading up to it that was sort of seismic was Kyle Frazier's decision. What did you think of what he decided to do?
Well, you have to like it. I mean, he didn't do the selfish thing and transfer or quit or whine in the media. He, you know, he accepted it. I think we've all felt like, you know, Kyle had a really rough year last year. A lot of it wasn't his fault. A lot of it was the offense, the design of the offense that he wasn't suited for. And, you know, the offense not having a lot of things working and him being out there on his own. But as the season went along, he really kind of got that deer in the headlights look, took a lot of sacks, you know, threw the ball away, ran up the middle a lot when plays could have developed. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where could he get it back and could he be 100% with no fear back there and no worries and 100% confident? And I think he couldn't. I think he could never get all the way back from that. And so some of that, honestly, I think we could blame on Scott Leffert maybe. Mm-hmm. But and some of that could have just been where Kyle was going anyhow. You will never know. But it is where it is. So in this case, he decided to move the defense. We have to respect that. It's similar. Everybody's made the analogy to the Cody Burns decision to play wide receiver. But I think in this case, you know, moving a defense is a completely different thing.
Yeah, and it's not exactly a one-to-one comparison either. I've pointed this out a couple of times on Twitter that with Cody's case, he fought to the very end and then was told he was not going to be the quarterback and then went and gave the speech to the players saying, you know, I'm not going to be the quarterback. You should get behind Chris Todd. In this case, they hadn't made a decision yet as far as we know. There was still a week to go at least. And he just decided, you know what, I'm not going to win this. Let me see if I can find some other way to contribute. I'm not knocking him at all, and I'm not trying to take anything away. I'm just saying it was a different process. He sort of like pulled the plug on himself preemptively, it seemed like.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think he just knew is what I'm saying. I think he just saw where it was going, and he realized.
Sure, he saw where it was going and who was making plays and how he was doing and relative to everybody else. The players know. I mean, they're not telling the media everything that's going on. The players can see what's happening. And he knew, and so he made a decision what was, you know, what he could do to help the team. And honestly, right now, with the situation at safety,
yeah,
I'm glad he's over there.
Well, and you know, it looks to me like he would have finished fourth the way it shook out.
Absolutely.
So, okay, let me burn a couple more of my 10 points. This is fine. This moves us along. This show might be – I thought this show was going to run long, but we may be over sooner. One of those is that we when Gus was asked in one of his most recent press conferences, somebody at the very end of the press conference, like the last question as he was getting ready to, you know, leave the podium, somebody asked, who is the backup at boundary safety? Did you see what he said?
No, I didn't see.
Okay. They said, Gus, who's the backup at boundary safety? And he kind of stopped and gave one of those half smiles. That's kind of a smile, but not a smile, you know? And he said, well, we got Kyle Frazier, and Kyle Frazier's in the mix. And then he just kind of walked away. So that was all he said. So it sounds like Kyle is like number two, and there is no number three.
Well, I mean, a situation where there's a couple other guys back there at that position that haven't done a whole lot. And he's making plays. McNeil got kicked off the team, so he's not back there. I mean, you got
the broken ankle, Johnson.
Yeah, Jonathan Jones was the backup cornerback that broke his ankle. The rumor is that he broke his ankle. He's going to be out a long time.
Yeah.
So they weren't able to move Holsey back to quarterback, which, you know, they were thinking about doing. So now it's, you know, Holsey and Whitehead at safety. And they got Ryan Smith backing him up and probably Kyle Frazier.
Yeah.
Other than that, there's a couple other guys that have, you know, that come in, but none of them really distinguished themselves. You feel a lot better about the star position where you got, you know, Garrett, Robinson, Therese, Mm-hmm. And then the freshman McEnroe Alexander has made some plays at that position. So you feel like if they have to go with extra defensive backs, they put Garrett and Threese in the field at the same time. But we're thin at safety. I mean, if something happens to Holsey or Whitehead, you know, we're going to be in trouble in those first couple of games.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and by the way, you mentioned McEnroe Alexander. That's a player I've from the very beginning, I've been rooting for. I hope he has, not just for Auburn's sake, but I just hope he has a spectacularly good career, just because everybody in the recruiting world when we signed him was saying, well, nobody really wants him. They're just trying to get him so they can get his brother, right? Well, his brother went to Clemson and we got him. I hope he's awesome, you know, just to show those people up. I just think it'd be hilarious if he ended up having a better career than his brother, who's supposed to be.
Well, and it's one of those things where people look like, oh, his physical, his brother is built a little differently, it runs a little differently, so he should be a higher profile recruit. This guy was the player of the year in their district. He made a ton of tackles and plays in high school. He can, in a tough division of Florida, he can play.
Yeah, I hope he does. Yeah. Let's see. Depth in general, we talked about that a little bit. Do you have other depth concerns? I guess at the defensive line with D Ford, we have to worry a little bit.
The secondary is the biggest one, but the defensive end is a concern. I mean, with Ford out, you're not sure how long he's going to be out. You look at a situation where you're probably, you know, who's going to be the starters at defensive end? It looks like maybe Craig Sanders on one side. You know, on the other side, you've got, converted defensive tackle, Kenneth Carter.
Didn't they move Owens, I believe, back to defensive line again?
Yep. So you got kind of Nosa Igwe, Craig Sanders. You got Kenneth Carter, who was a defensive tackle. You got Owens, who's a smaller guy, but more of a pass rusher kind of guy. If it's a run situation, I mean, you feel okay with, like, Igwe and Kenneth Carter out there. But rushing the passer, it's going to be Owens. I think it's going to be the two freshmen out there. I think they're going to play a lot. I mean,
yeah.
Washington State's going to throw the ball 70 times.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
There's a lot of pass rush in a warm, August, early September evening. So it's going to be, I think those guys are going to play probably 25 snaps.
It's going to be a long game. There's going to be a lot of plays in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Man. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to only get to see about the first half because I'll be doing panels at Dragon Con that afternoon. But I've got like just like last year, last year I was able to go to the Georgia Dome. I walked over to the Georgia Dome from Dragon Con and watched the first half of the game, and then I had to leave at halftime because they needed me on a panel and they pay me to be there, so I kind of had to do it as a guest. But same thing this year. I'm going to watch it on TV. I just have to find a hotel somewhere in downtown Atlanta to get to see the first half. So, okay. Before we get to, I think we should save SEC predictions for the end, because that gets us back out of Auburn.
Sure.
So, thoughts, since we mentioned Washington State, what are your thoughts about how that Washington State game is going to go? Let's talk a little bit about that. What should we look for?
Well, I think it's good. I mean, like you said, it's going to be a lot of plays. It's going to be a high-scoring kind of game. I think, they're going to come out and throw the ball a lot. They can't run the ball. They're not going to run the ball against us, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to throw the ball, and they're going to make plays throwing the ball. They're going to move the ball sometimes on us. Auburn's going to have to come out, with a new offense, a new quarterback, make plays, control the line of scrimmage of the offensive line, run the ball, keep them off balance. And we're going to have to score some points. And we can't settle for field goals. We're going to have to come out and score some touchdowns. And the offense is probably going to have to score 27 points in that game at least. So, pressure. But I think the biggest thing is we're going to come out, we're going to run the ball well with Mason and Cameron Artis Payne. I think we're going to be fine between those guys and the offensive line, with Prosh and Uzuma and those guys blocking. And I think that's going to allow – take some of the pressure off Marshall and let him do some play action stuff. I think we're going to run the ball. We're going to do play action, and we're going to hit some big plays down the field, Ricardo Lewis and Denson and those guys. And I think that's going to be fine. I think it's going to open it all up, and we're going to be okay. Defensively, I'm a little concerned, especially with the depth in the secondary. We're going to have to make a lot of tackles in the open space. And, that's been a real weakness over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I'd like to think Auburn could be better at that. with the new defensive staff and new players. But Rome wasn't built in a day, and Auburn's defense isn't going to go from awful to back to 2004 or 1988 overnight. So I think there's going to be times in Washington State really moves the ball. I mean, this is a team that had over 400 yards passing and more than two touchdowns against Oregon and Stanford and UCLA. And Oregon and Stanford both had excellent defenses.
Yeah.
So they're going to move the ball on us. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to get pressure with the front guys, and we're going to have to tackle. We're going to do all these little dump-offs and crossing routes and stuff with the receivers. We're going to have to tackle in space when they get it.
What do we know about their defense? Anything? I mean, they weren't horrible, were they, last year on defense? They were able to beat Washington and play those other teams tough.
Well, a lot of what they do in defense is kind of a high-risk, high-reward thing. They bring a lot of guys from multiple angles to kind of put a lot of pressure on you, kind of take a lot of chances on defense.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of that is they give up a lot of huge plays. They gave up a lot of plays over 50 yards last year.
Yeah.
So it could be a situation where they send seven or eight guys a lot of times to catch Auburn and, tackle us at the line of scrimmage or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be other times when they do that and, Marshall gets out of the pocket or he dumps the ball off to somebody and then it's off to the races.
This game, and I may be wrong, but it may be why I said it at the beginning. I may have already edited it out to make myself look better. but whether I did or not, at the beginning, I accidentally called Washington State West Virginia because it's W, and it's I just finished watching the West Virginia game over again on my DVD a few days ago. And that's the game that this one has been kind of making me think of, because that was a game where, see, I keep thinking of 2009 when I think of this year's team. I keep thinking of how, we were coming off a bad year and so forth. And I'm going to say more about that in a minute. And that was a game where it was like 20 to something in the first quarter, it seemed like. I forget
sure.
now, but it was multiple touchdowns by at least one of the two teams in the first quarter. And that's kind of what makes me think of, is that when you get into a scoring contest with Gus, unless he's Arkansas State and you're Oregon, he's in the game. He's not going to it's tough to get in a scoring contest with Gus and him be completely out of the game.
No, I think that's a good point.
So, and did I read somewhere that Washington State last year averaged in their games, they averaged 29 rushing yards a game?
Oh, yeah. That, like, looked at one yard a carry.
Good gosh.
They were the worst rushing team in America. So that's going to be a big key to the game, is we need to keep that shut down so they are completely one-dimensional, so we're not afraid of it. So when the guys up front could really pin their ears back and come after them.
Their running game was the rushing equivalent of Trent Dilfer's passing game.
Well, and the other thing is their offensive line has three guys that started out as walk-ons on
it. That's right. That's right,
and
yeah.
One of them, I think it's the right guard, is like 259 pounds or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's a guy who's going to be matched up against 300-pound defensive tackle for Auburn.
Yeah.
Blackson's 310, Gabe Wright's 296. He's going to be playing a matchup against those guys. They had to be able to get some push on him.
Well, think about Oregon's offensive line in the BCS game.
Yep.
I mean, it was tissue paper.
Mm-hmm.
They had to run screens and options and draws and stuff, which is what they ran against us the whole game, because they knew they weren't going to be able to just power anything. They couldn't.
Some of that was just Nick Fairley was so good.
Well, yeah, but still, I mean, I look at those Pac-12 teams like that, and it just seems like when they go up against an SEC team, they know they're going to have to do roundabout stuff,
Sure.
In fact,
sure.
I think if you look back over if you go back to the end of the Tuberville era, I think that the offenses that have had the most success against us now, Alabama aside, because they use the sledgehammer approach to everybody. But that aside, I think the offenses that have consistently caused us the most trouble have been these sort of screen pass, draw, dump it off offenses. Kentucky, Clemson, Oregon, right? These are offenses.
A&M.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, but those are offenses that pull you in and then just do the little screen pass. They don't try to overpower you at the point of attack or anything. They just do a lot of dumps, you know, little screens, tunnel screens, and all that kind of stuff. I don't like those offenses. I think that's a very effective offense, and certainly it helps negate a powerful big defensive front because you're taking them kind of out of the game.
Sure.
If you get the playoff quick enough.
Well, and also I look forward to Auburn actually not starting, you know, with the defensive backs 10 or 15 yards off the line of scrimmage this year. I think that'll be really exciting for everyone in the stadium.
Wow. A radical approach.
It's crazy.
Covering receivers.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, any other thoughts about Washington State specifically? It's going to be kind of cool to have Mike Leach in town.
He's a good coach. I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, I think Auburn will have an advantage of special teams. Both our kickers are great. I think we have good guys, but kick returner. So that'll be an area where we can maybe make a play. And I think the other one is we're just going to have to come out and score a bunch of points. We can't be, you know, real conservative on offense. I think Gus isn't going to want to go in some kind of ball control, slow it down, keep the ball away from the thing. He's going to attack. We're going to attack on offense and score points. That's what we got to do.
We've come a long way. I saw an interesting interesting quotes. Did you see this from Ben Leard? Because Leard had the advantage in terms of looking back on history that he played for Terry Bowden and for Tuberville.
Mm-hmm.
And in case people didn't see it, here's a couple of things that Leard said that stuck out to me. He said that Terry Bowden, 6 days a week, was standoffish, hard to talk to, didn't really seem to care or really seem to, you know, mesh with the players, the team, or anything. But he said on Saturday he had this amazing ability to figure out his offense and your defense and then communicate the ideas of how to beat that defense to his quarterback.
Okay.
I thought that was very interesting. It matched everything I know about him, right?
Sure.
And then it's interesting. He said when Tuberville came in, he said Tuberville was much, you know, better with the players, much better to get along with and everything like that. But he said that Tuberville's goal was to play defense, and his idea was if the offense could score 17 points, they should always win because his defense should never let the other team get 17 points, basically. And that sounds like every every Tuberville game I can remember, right? Where we're like, score some more points. You know, they'd get like 10 points and go, oh, time to play defense.
That makes complete sense to me.
Yeah, it reminds me of like the soccer games where, you know, when one team scores one goal and it's 1-0, they just put like 11 guys in front of their goal and just play defense the whole 90 minutes, you know. And it's so frustrating. You just like, if you score a few more, you won't have to worry about it, but they just go into the shell. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting. So, all right. 10 things coming out of fall camp that we have been noticing or thinking or talking about. We've talked about a couple of them. We touched on this a little bit. And I'm going to throw this to you, John, and we'll kind of bat these things back and forth a little bit. Yeah, you know, one of the first things I said a while ago was that this team reminds me of 2009, not necessarily in personnel so much, but in circumstances maybe.
Sure.
How would you compare the players that we have now, as from what we know, right, to that 2009 team?
I think it's a fair comparison. Some just because the offense was so bad the year before in both cases, and your Gus is coming in, changing things up. You're not sure what you have. You know, at wide receiver, both years we had no idea what we had. That team and versus what we have on this team, we have no idea really.
Absolutely.
Who's going to step up and make plays at wide receiver. So I think that's a lot of it. But I think, you know, in both cases we got good running backs. I think the offensive line is fine. I think we have a good fullback. We had Eric Smith in 2009. We had Prosh this year, and I think. You know, the defense was okay. It wasn't great in 2009, but it made some plays. And, you know, I'm not sure we had the same level of talent on this team on defense we had on that team. But I think there's a lot of similarities. And I think, you know, that team was fine. That team, you know, made a lot of plays and scored a lot of points. It was competitive.
And yet it still finished the regular season 7-5. It's interesting how it played out. I mean, they had to win the bowl game. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And it had its issues against, like, for example, Arkansas. But that takes me to my second point, which is, you know, the offensive line. I keep hearing that our offensive line right now is so good. Gus said something like we have more depth, more good quality depth at offensive line than we had any time he coached at Auburn. How, if you look at our current offensive line, how do you evaluate it and how do you compare it to previous offensive lines like the 09, 10 or whatever?
I think it's a good question. I think the depth thing is the truth. I mean, you look and there's, you know, more than 10 guys that you feel pretty good about that were highly recruited guys that could play, you know, 4 or 5 star guys that, you know, everybody in the country wanted, and we've got them. So, and, you know, I haven't had a lot of injury issues on that side of the ball and the offensive line that we're aware of. So I think we're in good shape there. That's one position you feel pretty good about in terms of the depth and the talent to be very successful. I think there's a couple of guys in that line that, you know, are going to be studs. I think Greg Robinson is going to be a stud in the SEC. I think he's going to, you know, knock people out of the way. And I think some of the other guys stepping up are going to make a real difference.
Yeah, I mean, like Jordan, is it Jordan Diamond?
Yes.
And a couple others, they're like second or third string right now. And these are guys that were 4 or 5 stars that we were just so excited. We were over the moon about a year or two ago when they committed to us, remember?
That's right. Avery Young is backing up. Diamond's backing up.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I guess when you look at the players that one of the big knocks on Chizik was we were signing all these 4 and 5 star players and they just seemed to disappear off the roster, right? They just evaporated off the roster. But with the exception of, was it Westerman that went to Arizona State? With the exception of him, we've pretty much held on to our offensive linemen. I may be forgetting somebody else. We lost, you know, the one guy that, you know, Cyrus Kawamba that went.
He never signed with us.
He just said he was going to come to us, and then his mama said, no, you're not, and that was it. But we even have Sean Coleman back.
Sure.
So not only have we mostly held on to these guys, unlike like every other position on the team, we even have the one guy back that you kind of honestly had to wonder, was he ever going to play football again? This was the one that had cancer, right? And
he's
gone a long and winding road to get him back, but he's out there and competing.
Well, you just got to hope that some game, you know, this year or next year, he gets up to the speed to the point where he could come and play in a game. That'd be a great moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's cool.
But I think the one thing I want to say about that is, you know, here's one thing to think about. The only senior on the entire starting offense is Prosh.
Wow. That's, and this is only his second year there, but yeah, that's amazing. Right.
So he's the only senior. There's a couple of juniors on the O-line, but there are no seniors there. So I think in that sense, comparing him to the 09 offensive line is good because I think this is a talented group with a lot of potential, but they're going to be better as the year goes along, and I think they're going to be even better next year.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. It makes you feel better, feel good about things. Well, the offensive line, part of their job is opening up holes for the running game, and that brings me to the point number 3, the running game. You've got to think, if nothing else, our running game should be pretty good this year and certainly better than last year.
Well, that's not a high bar to jump up. You know, the running game was awful last year, and that was, you know, we misused Trey Mason, Prosh and everybody else. We did a terrible job. Ran McCaleb up the middle 100 times. So, you know, this offense, we know this offense will work. We know they will be able to run the ball. We have talent with Mason and Payne. We'll be able to run Grant on the end around, and the younger guy, Barber, that's moving in with Ford, shifting over to defensive back. So,
yeah, we'll talk about that, yeah.
Got plenty of good young running backs, and I think between them and again the offensive line, you got Prosh in as a blocker, that tight end Uzuma in as a blocker. We're going to be fun. We're going to come right on the sweep with those guys, and we're going to open up some holes, and it's going to be fun. We're going to be in. You do that, and then suddenly you know you're doing the end around the other way to one of the receivers or Marshall running the other way with the ball, and we're going to make some big plays.
Yeah, I see some naked bootlegs in our future.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the plays that just kills people this year. You're right.
Whereas Cam would do kind of that stutter step inside move, Mm-hmm. And I think that Marshall's going to have to do some of that too. That's kind of a standard because you're using a wildcat approach to quarterback, sure, basically, and you got to have that inside because on the jet sweep, you know, the read option.
Sure.
A big part of that is either isn't it neat though? Because you and I, obviously, because of the name of the show, we love the wishbone. We love that multiple back option attack where the quarterback can keep it, give it to the fullback, or pitch it to a halfback. And really, the speed sweep, the jet sweep, is just a modern evolution of that exact thing, isn't it?
Sure.
You're just sending your wide guy really wide.
That's right. And it's sending them the other way. Then you run at the counter where they're coming back the other way against mm-hmm. the grain and stuff. And it makes a big difference. So
yeah.
It's fun to watch. And I think, you know, that misdirection, we've kind of forgotten it. But it makes, you know, you see last year when things are so predictable, mm-hmm. what a big difference that makes when you do have the misdirection, when the team doesn't know which way you're going to go every time, when you're faking the ball one way and going the other way, keeping them off balance. So,
you know, I've said this before. We used to have some of the smaller, the directional schools coming to Jordan-Hare, and the ones that always played Auburn really tough were the ones, to me, I would watch them very carefully, the ones that had offenses that used a lot of misdirection, and I don't even mean like using a lot of reverses, not a lot of grandiose stuff in the way back deep, just the ones that would run a couple of running backs and send them in different directions, right? And the quarterback could keep it, or the running backs go in different directions or stuff, because that keeps the defense very honest. And I always used to say, if the day ever came that Auburn, with our caliber of athletes, could run an offense that actually makes the defense have to think and not just be predictable, we could be really good. Well, here's Gus doing exactly that, right? He runs an offense that takes advantage of the players and the advantages that he has, and he puts a lot of pressure on the defense. And I love that. I love it.
Yep.
It's one of the many reasons that I love his offense so much. Okay, well, the breakdown that I kind of envision of the running game, and you tell me how you react to this, I see Trey Mason about 40%. I see Cameron Artis Payne about 40%, because I think they'll be used in different ways, but they'll, we'll see how it shakes out. And the remaining 20% with Grant, Prosh, and maybe Barber. Now, if Jonathan Ford had stayed on offense, I think it might have been a little higher number. But I think that Grant, Prosh, and Barber, and whoever else, maybe the quarterback.
Well, I was going to say Marshall.
Yeah, Marshall will split up that other 20%. And I say that just because if you go much below 40% of either one of those two main feature backs, you're really starting to say, you know, you're not using them enough. So what do you think?
I think that's a good breakdown. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. You give both of them 15, 20 carries a game.
Yeah.
I think that really works. And the other guys, you know, like you said, you break them in the sweep every once in a while. I don't think they're going to hand the ball to Prosh much at all.
No.
It may be in short yardage or something, but I don't see that. I think he'll be a pass catcher as a safety valve a good bit, but I don't see him running the ball a lot. But, Grant and whoever else plays the speed sweep position, obviously, they'll get the ball 5-10 times a game on that.
I think that the Prosh with the ball is one of those things that is overhyped. And this happens every year. Every year there's at least one player that in the preseason everybody's like, oh, wait till we start giving that player the ball. And there's always that one guy that never happens. In 2010, it was Trevon Reed. Of course, he got hurt. And there was the huge fullback. It always seems to work out that way. And Eric Smith, as good of a fullback as he was, and we did throw the ball to him a few times, including a couple that he dropped in infamous positions.
Sure.
He never carried the ball very much. He did catch a few passes, but not that much. So, yeah, I think Prosh will be a great blocker. I'd love to see him carry the ball. I just don't see it. I don't think when the day is done, it'll shake out that way. So we've kind of got the Dyer or Ben Tate figure divided up between Trey and Cameron Artis Payne, and we've got the McCaleb position with Grant. So who's going to be the Mario Fannin of this group?
It's a good question. I mean, I don't think it's going to be Mason or Payne getting way more carries than another. I think they'll both balance each other out. So I think it's going to be kind of put them together in their Tate.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess for Fannin was always sort of like the relief guy coming in, you know, they kind of, he'd switch back and forth. He'd do the mop up some. He had the turnover issue. So, well, how much do you think we'll see Barber much?
You know, before Ford switched to defense, I would have said we redshirted him, but I think he's going to play now. I mean, at the end of games and the games we're playing smaller schools, and you know, I think he'll carry the ball a good bit, but in the bigger games, you know, a couple plays a game.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so speaking of Jonathan Ford moving to defense, I just got to put this out there. I mentioned this on Twitter. We now have a running back playing defensive back, a defensive back playing quarterback, and a quarterback playing defensive back.
Well, there you go.
There you go. What can you say? It's a pretty strange arrangement, but there it is. Number five. Number five, the defensive line. We talked about the two freshmen. What do you think they're going to do? And also, while you're thinking about those two guys, we've got this new position, the star. I hope that doesn't go to anybody's head that you're the star. It was the spur at South Carolina. I would have thought it would be like the talon or the claw or something.
I'm sure they experimented with all those things.
Yeah, the beak.
No, good gosh, no.
So what do you see about the two freshmen, and what do you see about Justin Garrett and others at the star? How do you think this is all going to play out?
I mean, I think the two freshmen are going to play. I think Lawson is a stud that everybody in America wanted. I think he played. I think Elijah Daniel was really, you know, a player that Ole Miss really wanted. A lot of schools really wanted it. I think he's had a really good camp too. I think those guys are going to play, you know, 20 snaps at least against Washington State, and they're going to get pressure on the quarterback. I think Lawson and Daniel are both going to make a difference. From the first game, I think they're going to play. They're going to get pressure. I think, you know, you don't overwhelm them. Don't ask them to do too much. And just ask them to go out and get the quarterback, put him in a third and long and let him go and that kind of thing. I think they'll be fine. I think they'll make a difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's going to be exciting to have some young guys on the defensive line that are really going after it. And this is an area where I really like Rodney Garter as a coach.
Yes, yes.
Georgia's defensive line has been excellent for years. They have turned out NFL player after NFL player. And I think he's going to make a big difference. I think our defensive line is going to be really good. You know, we actually took a real step backwards when Tracy Rocker left with the
NFL. Absolutely, absolutely.
And I think Garner is going to make a big difference in terms of the quality of play of the defensive line.
Yeah, I think that was one of the major drop-offs was when we switched from Tracy Rogers to Mike Pelton.
Yep.
Tracy Rocker, I'm sorry, Rogers, Tracy Rocker.
Sure. That was a big difference. So I think it's a huge upgrade to Garner, and I think he's going to make a real difference with the guys we have back on the team who have kind of underperformed the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in terms of the star thing, I mean, we'll get overexcited about it. It's basically, you know, an outside linebacker safety. So, I mean, it's a really small outside linebacker, or it's a big safety. But those were guys at South Carolina who made a lot of plays, though, it seemed like, in that defense that – Swearinger and some of those other guys in that defense made plays over the years. So, and Garrett supposedly has really thrived in it. So, I mean, you feel good that you keep hearing good stuff about him in the spring and the fall. He has been injured, which you got to worry about, but they said he's back 100% now practicing this week. So, we're going to need him, especially against this kind of offense where they're throwing the ball, trying to spread us out. This is to be better able to adapt to these kind of spread, passy around defenses, offenses. So I think Garrett is a big, vital part of this. We got to keep him healthy. We got to keep him on the field. And he's got to go out there and make plays. But I think, I mean, he could emerge as an all-SEC caliber player in this system. I think it's much better for him.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's amazing to me. I was just seeing the other day how many different teams now are going to a sort of a tempo or either a spread or a no huddle or both. Approach. Did I see Texas is going to that now?
They're going to it more. I mean, they did some of that last year, but sure.
It just seems like teams you never would have thought. I mean, obviously Ole Miss is running it now. Tennessee is going to it, right?
Oh yeah.
So it's just this seems to be the thing. So Well, let's see. We covered 6 and 7 already. Number 8 is the wide receiver position. Now, we talked about how much of a difference we think that Rodney Garner is going to make as the coach there. I think we have a coach that's making a huge difference at wide receiver in the aforementioned Damian Craig. And we know that in 2009, we had a Darvin Adams receiver emerge in Darvin Adams. So we get to find out who will emerge. We know somebody will, right? I mean, we're pretty confident that there will be at least one receiver to step up and be a Darvin Adams. Maybe we'll have another receiver step up and be the T-Zach. Mm-hmm. And who knows, maybe even we'll have somebody step up and be the Emery Blake, who was like the third banana on that first, you know, the first sure. first couple of receiving squads.
I think the guy that's going to step up is going to be Ricardo Lewis. Mm-hmm. I think he's the guy that, you know, he showed – we didn't play him enough last year, but when he caught the ball, he looked good. I think he's had a great camp. He's made a lot of plays in scrimmages. The reports about him coming out of camp are excellent, and he's really thrived in this offense. And I think he's a guy that, you know, Malzahn and them know how to get their good players the ball in space to make plays. And I think, yeah. you know, Lewis is going to be that guy, and that mold where he, you know, he takes advantage of the defense, gets open, finds the right space, and I think Marshall's going to get him the ball, and I think Lewis is going to have a big year. I think he can have a big first 2 or 3 weeks, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, and then somebody's going to run right by the defense, and Marshall is going to just step back and chuck it 60 yards, and I think Lewis could be that guy.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the game plan right there. Run, 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 play action, touchdown.
Throw it over their head. That's right. I think that's what Lewis is going to do. I think he's going to have a big – and then he could be a guy on the reverse too, but I think it really where we need him is we need somebody to step up and make plays where they catch the ball and then run with it after they catch it.
That was always more the Terrell Zachary role.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take either one at this point, you better believe. I haven't heard anything at all about the two freshman stud receivers. Have you?
I have. I mean, they made some plays, and I think they're, you know, they're out there, but there's a lot of guys ahead of them.
Yeah.
The one freshman receiver that's good they keep talking about is the one that you're not referred to, and that's the little bitty guy, Marcus Davis.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like 5'9", 175. And it's like oh, yeah. Markeith Cooper size.
Oh, my goodness. The lizard returns.
But he's playing in that slot position kind of behind Quan Bray, and there's a guy that they keep saying good things about, keep making plays. I think he could be the second string guy there, and he could play some plays on offense. He could be the guy getting the ball in the end around.
Yeah.
And he could be a guy in the slot catching a couple passes, making plays in that game.
What's your Trevon Reed prediction?
I'm not holding my breath. I mean, I think he's going to be the second or third string receiver on one side, and we'll see. I mean, he's had a lot of injuries. Maybe he's healthy this year. I hope he has a big season. Maybe the injuries have taken their toll and he's not going to be the player he could have been.
Well, we've talked about him before that he really is sort of a player that was one of the highest recruited ranked players we ever got. And just never seemed to – he seemed to me always to be one of those guys that was just great in high school. But when you put him up in a league with people who are almost or as fast as he is but bigger –
mm-hmm.
What do you end up getting? Running for your life and injuries. And that's kind of been what he's done.
Yep. And going down when somebody touches you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the other part.
So. Right. So, the number 9, we're almost to the end of this, is some people have pointed out that in the early games, even if our defense will get better as the year goes on, the defense could be weak early on. We talked about this a little bit already. What do you think we need to do on offense early on to carry the defense? Do you think that that's the case? And if so, how?
Well, I think one thing is, you know, trying to score and get ahead and put pressure on the other team so they have to, you know, come out and take chances. That's not so much interesting to Washington State because that's what they're going to do anyway. I mean, you know they're going to spread out, throw the ball 60 times, whether they're ahead or behind. But if Auburn can get them ahead, it puts some more pressure on them, and then we're more likely to be able to just kind of pin our ears back and come after them. Can be more aggressive in the coverage and that kind of stuff. So, that's one thing. It's much harder if you're behind, if Auburn falls behind in the game, puts pressure on the offense to make plays, I think the biggest thing would be have some success early, give the offense some confidence, give the team some confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, after last year, people underrate this, but after last year, there's a lot of guys that, you know, they think it's going to be okay, but you never know until the lights come on, you're out there playing. And come out and make a couple of big plays early, mm-hmm, would really give them a boost of confidence to say, okay, that, you know, the dark days are over, we're going to be okay.
Well, I hope so. I think back to 2010, even as great as the offense was in 2010, we only scored 17 points in Starkville against Mississippi State with that 2000. Now, I realize it was very early and we still didn't fully know what we had with Cam and everything, but still, that 2010 offense only scored 17 points against Mississippi State. It makes me nervous to think that we could be in a position where we could give up 20 or 30 points to Mississippi State early on. Can we score that many points with this offense this early in the season?
Well, I think we're going to have to. I think they know the defense is what it is. I think we'll be able to, you know, defense will be better, but I think they're going to be more aggressive on offense. I think they're going to take chances, run the ball. And the other part is, again, Chizik was the head coach then. Malzahn was the offensive coordinator. Now Malzahn's the head coach. If he wants to go fast and be aggressive on offense, he's going to do it. He's not going to be like hold back, you know, play ball control, that kind of stuff. He's going to go when he wants to speed up and go fast, he's going to do it.
You know, and that's my 10th point, which I'm changing out because we've already kind of covered a little bit of what I originally had. But, yeah, we're finally going to see Gus's offense in all of its glory. He has no reason not to just put the pedal to the metal. He's got every reason to, like you just said. And so I can't wait. And we were talking about doing like a little Gus speedometer.
The gusto meter
for this fall. So, just how fast is he going? You know, I was talking to my wife about that. I was explaining to her. I said, you know, because she follows it pretty close now, and I said, you know, you remember all these times that I was complaining that we didn't seem to be going as fast as I thought we would go. I said, that's not going to be the case anymore. We're going to be zoom, zoom, zooming. So it should be great. Gus said he wants to be the fastest playing team in the country. And that means he's got to go faster than Oregon. And I like that. I like that kind of talk. And like I said,
that'd be fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, a lot of teams are going to be running this sort of offense now. In fact, I've got to share this one. Somebody on AL.com, one of those guys, made this very interesting point. They said, Brett Bielema, the Arkansas coach.
Hey, Beavis. What? Let's go fishing.
he was attacking our offense and saying that's not real American football and all that. And somebody pointed out that he's coaching in Arkansas where Gus invented this offense, and he's recruiting high schools where everybody is copying Gus's offense.
Oh, yeah, all the high schools in Arkansas are running it, so it's tough for them.
Yeah, it may be a little difficult for Butthead to successfully recruit his own state if he's criticizing the very offense that all of his top prospects run.
Well, and they're already made to run in our offense, not in his offense.
Yes, right. So that's a very interesting little observation. And I don't remember if it was Brandon Marcello or one of those guys, but somebody made that point. It was very good. And lastly, little tidbit I'll tack on, you know that we've only lost one bowl game since the 2001 Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl North Carolina game. We only lost one bowl game in the last 12 years, and that was, of course, the 05 Wisconsin game where the 05 team really didn't care, and Wisconsin was Barry Alvarez's last game, and you know they had all the emotion and we didn't, and that's fine. So it's just going to be interesting to see if we can get to a bowl game, because Auburn just seems to do really well in bowl games lately, and I'd love to keep that streak going. So, because that's pretty remarkable, you know, one loss in the last 12 years, and we've been in a bowl most of those years.
It's impressive.
Yeah. So, all right, before we get a few SEC predictions in to kind of wrap things up, I got to point out, as always, that once again, we are brought to you unofficially by Red Diamond Tea. Red Diamond, that keeps me going when we're recording late at night like we are now. Look for it in your grocery store, Red Diamond Tea. It's good stuff. SEC predictions. We just had a little bullet point down to talk about SEC predictions. I would point our listeners to our columns this week, last week and this week at the War Eagle Reader, where we kind of go into a lot of depth. John does some amazing research. He tells you, you know, the percentage of the offense that each team lost. He tells you what their strength of schedule is from the Phil Steele rankings and everything. You get a lot of information.
Well, and I think it is the thing you need to know about the schedule about every SEC team is, you know, who do they get? Who are the road teams? Who are the home teams?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest thing is, you know, who do they avoid? Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to talk about this in the predictions in a minute. If you avoid, you know, there's three really good teams last year in the West, Alabama, A&M, and LSU, mm-hmm. three really good teams in the East, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina. If you're the Western team and you avoid those three good teams in the East, that gives you a big advantage if your rivals are playing those teams. It's the same with the East if you avoid Alabama, A&M, and LSU. So we put that in there because that's a big question for every one of these teams. Not just who you're playing, but who do you avoid, and then in the rivals in your division, who do they play?
And what happened last year?
It made the difference.
The two teams were the two teams that avoided the top three on each side. It's amazing. Yeah, and that's another thing I saw is one of the writers was pointing out that Les Miles went storming into the SEC meetings in the off season, yelling and screaming about his schedule. And so, lo and behold, they dropped Florida, maybe?
No, you're thinking about 2014. Let's not go there yet.
All right. Well, anyway, it did get – they were pointing out how Les got things changed and another coach didn't. And they were saying, like, basically the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of thing. And Les just complained and moaned about it until, you know, they improved his situation. So, well, whatever. All right. So what do you want to do in terms of SEC predictions?
Well, let's just pick the East and the West and talk through who we think is going to win.
Okay. All right, SEC East, the one we care less about, so let's get them out of the way first.
I think, again, we were just talking about the scheduling thing. South Carolina doesn't play any of the big teams. Georgia has to play LSU. Florida has to play LSU. I think that makes a difference. None of them play Alabama. Big shock. So I think that South Carolina dodging everybody makes a difference, and I think – they're going to come through and win the East. They're the most balanced team,
which
is a great offensive team, but I'm not sure about the defense. Florida lost a lot of guys on defense, and their offense may be better, but it was terrible last year. So I think South Carolina can win the East.
How do you see South Carolina-Georgia matching up?
Well, I mean, South Carolina annihilated them last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a complete destruction, and that was a much better Georgia team. So – you know, it may be closer this time, but I like South Carolina again. Okay. And this is, again, Georgia starts at Clemson and at South Carolina. They could be 0-2.
Yeah, for the second time in, what, 3-4 years?
Oh, yeah.
Remember, because they started out, they lost to Boise State. And
that's right.
Somebody else a couple of years ago. So, and then won 10 in a row and went to the SEC championship game. So, okay, so we basically see South Carolina, Georgia, Florida. Is that how we do it?
Yeah, I think so.
And then the rest, you know, whatever. who cares? I mean, we even had a thing where when we did the East, dear listener, where we couldn't quite figure out who was worse, Kentucky or Missouri, and we kind of bounced back and forth because our numbers didn't quite match up. So that's how hard it is to sort out the bottom. But remember, as Pac-12 coaches all like to point out, the worst teams in the Pac-12 are better than the worst teams in the SEC. And as I think Kevin Skarbinski said, do you get a trophy for that? Oh, so if Kentucky is not as good as Arizona, then does that mean that Arizona gets it? I don't know. Okay, well, what about the West? I think we know who's...
I mean, Alabama's picked to win it all. You got to like them as the favorite. They got to go to Texas A&M. But you don't know what the situation is with Manziel.
Yeah.
I, LSU lost a lot of guys. It's tough to like them. You got to pick Alabama to win it until somebody knocks them off. I think they're not going to be as good as last year, but I think A&M is not going to be as good as last year, and I think LSU is not going to be as good as last year.
Yeah, and hey, we're going to be better now. Does that mean we're going to close the gap? I mean, there's not as good as last year, and there's better than last year, but that doesn't necessarily mean the lines cross, does it?
No, I mean, we're going to be better. They're going to be worse, but, you know, they're starting on top of Mount Everest, and we were starting at the bottom of a hole at the bottom of the Marianas Trench. So, you know, the lines haven't intersected yet. We got a long way to go up, and they got to come down a little bit. So, yeah. You know, we all think Gus is going to get him there eventually, but it's not going to happen tomorrow.
Right. So, somebody pointed out that one of – and Holly Anderson retweeted this, but she had said it months ago – that one advantage Alabama has is that they do not have to play themselves.
It's true. Look, we said it in our preview. They have the easiest schedule in the SEC according to Phil Steele.
Yeah, and who has the hardest? This amazed me. Florida, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think it was Florida. Weird.
They got a tough SEC schedule, and they're playing Florida State. So,
but they don't play Alabama, and they still got the toughest schedule. That's just weird.
But they're playing. I mean, they got LSU. They got Florida State. That's a tough schedule.
Play Miami, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. They're playing at Miami.
Wow. So.
So it's two tough non-conference games, you know, plus Georgia, South Carolina, LSU. That's a tough schedule.
Mm-hmm. So, Alabama at the top. LSU, Texas A&M. What do we? It's just that's the thing is that LSU is changing their offense somewhat with their new coordinator. It couldn't get any less coordinated, honestly.
That's why I expect it to be better. I just think they're gonna have a plan.
Yeah, I think that their offense will be marginally better and their defense will be slightly worse, and they're just hard to predict because of that. Texas A&M, I mean. Have you heard Feinbaum's remarks about Texas A&M?
No, I purposely don't listen.
Well, and you shouldn't. I don't either, but I saw him on ESPN. I couldn't get away. I was watching one of the preview shows, and he basically thinks A&M is just enormously overrated. He doesn't see any reason why they're going to win hardly any games, basically. I mean, I don't know if he goes that far, but he just really thinks they're the most overrated team ever, basically. So what's your reaction to that?
Well, I think that's silly. I mean, they were good last year. I mean, let's say Manziel gets cleared tomorrow for the NCAA. They have a lot of talent on offense. They have good running backs. They have good receivers. They have the one offensive tackle who stayed is going to be a top 10 draft pick next year. So, and the other guy filling on the other side is not bad. They're going to be okay on offense. They're going to score points on a lot of people. Defensively is where the issue is going to be. They lost a couple of guys. The year before they came into the SEC, when they were in the Big 12, they were giving up like 29 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
And they got the new coaching staff, and that helps. And they were playing SEC offenses, which were worse than the Big 12 offenses they played. And they went down last year, and they were giving up 20, 21 points a game. So they lost some guys talent-wise. Their defense is going to be worse. If they go back up to giving up 27, 28 points a game, other teams are moving the ball on them late in the game, I think it's going to be a real difference. I mean, the other part is their offense was so good last year, they got ahead of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, made those games not contest. And that may not happen quite as much. But, I mean, they're a legitimate good team. I mean, whatever you want to say about Manziel as a human being, he's like Doug Flutie. I mean, he just runs around and makes plays.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you remember 2 years ago, A&M was the team that blew every halftime lead.
Right, but they were ahead in every game. That's the other part is
they
did blow a bunch of leads and lose a bunch of games they shouldn't have, but they were ahead of every single team they played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess the other half of the SEC West, because we do care about that, if we have Alabama at the top and then LSU, A&M, just kind of murkily in there, second, third, something like that, Auburn and three other teams, right? Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. Do you see us finishing ahead of all three of those?
I think the next best team out of that group is Ole Miss.
Yeah.
I think they were really good last year offensively. I think they got a lot more talent now. the recruiting class with the guys they have coming back. They lost almost nobody, and they, you know, they have a pretty tough schedule. I mean, they have to play at Texas in a non-conference game. It's not easy for them, but I think you know, they're going to be really good on offense again. They got a lot of talent at receiver, got solid running backs. They got the Bo Wallace guy back at quarterback, who's okay. He makes plays. And defensively, it's going to be a little better. So that's a team I think you know, is probably going to finish fourth. And then I think Auburn can beat the other two teams out.
What would you say, as we kind of wrap things up here, what would you say is the one game opening weekend besides ours that you're most looking forward to seeing?
Well, because I'll be on campus, I won't get to see any of them live unless I'm walking around seeing them. But I'm trying to record some to watch them at
home
later.
Me too.
Georgia Clemson. I mean, I think Alabama Virginia Tech is going to be an annihilation.
Yeah, I do too.
Virginia Tech's got a lot of injury problems. And, you know,
they have a big handicap on offense in their booth.
But listen, this is Scott Loeffler's revenge game.
Oh, God.
All the stuff he learned from playing Alabama a couple months ago, he's going to pull out now. But no, that game's going to be like 40-3 or something.
Yeah, it will.
And I feel bad for the Tech people when I say that. But so I think, you know, Georgia Clemson is going to be a great game. That's going to be really fun. Mm-hmm. So that's, and I think the underrated SEC game to go watch, to keep an eye on, is the early one, Mississippi State, Oklahoma State in Houston.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm also kind of interested by South Carolina, North Carolina. That just to me seems like a natural rivalry that should be played like Georgia, Georgia Tech.
That's Thursday night.
Or Florida, Florida State. Well, and that brings me to the one I think – I know this is going to seem weird, but honestly, I am looking forward to Georgia-Clemson, obviously, because that's just going to be big-time stuff. But the one that I'm looking forward to that's kind of under everybody's radar, but I think it's going to be really very interesting and fun, I believe Ole Miss-Vanderbilt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what year before would you have said, ooh, Ole Miss-Vandy, can't wait to see that one? But given what's happened at both campuses over the last couple of years, I think that game – I mean, think of it this way. Whichever one of those two teams win that game will be in a position to do slightly maybe better than anybody thinks. And the one that loses is going to have to say, this was our year to make a run at the championship game, and we couldn't even beat this team.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think they're both contenders to finish fourth in their division. And – this is a big game in terms of, you know, one of those teams is going to be 1-0, one's going to be 0-1, already looking at a hole. So
yeah,
I think it's two, you know, pretty evenly matched good teams. I think it's going to be a good game.
Yeah. Oh, and one last thing we got to squeeze in here, and we're going to get out of here. The 2014 Auburn schedule came out, and we haven't really talked about it on here. But the thing that really jumps out, everybody's talking about, is that we go to Georgia and to Alabama. You know, you and I have talked about this a lot on this show.
You knew it was coming.
Well, is that we didn't know what they were going to do. Were they going to stagger it? Were they going to flip it around the other way? I don't think we knew at all what they were going to do. But that's not the thing that really interested me the most, because I wasn't that concerned about those two games anyway. What got me is we opened the season with Arkansas, and that's that just demonstrates the power ESPN has now. There was an article today in the New York Times, or I
read
saw it
that.
Today.
It's an excellent article.
Yeah, and it showed just how much power and influence. I mean, I loved how it said that colleges don't even print kickoff times on their tickets anymore because of ESPN, because ESPN calls them up and says, you will be kicking off at blank time.
That's right.
It's just amazing, isn't it?
But the other thing that's coming next year, the SEC Network. Yeah. And there's a real chance that Auburn-Arkansas game is the opening week SEC Network game.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be huge.
Yeah, see, we point out that we played we opened the season with an SEC team very rarely, and it's usually Ole Miss. I was going to say that, you know, somebody asked, what was the last time we opened the season with an SEC team other than Ole Miss? The last one, honestly, that I can remember was Kentucky in 1988.
Yep.
That's the last time I remember opening the season with an SEC team other than Ole Miss. So
that sounds right to me.
Yeah. So, well, we got through all that.
That was fun.
Any last thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I'm just excited football's finally here. We're gonna have real stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I hate that Dragon Con, and which is my other big passion, half my books or that kind of stuff, is the same dang weekend as opening college football. And so every year I end up scrambling around hotels and running around at downtown Atlanta trying to get to or see these games. So like you said just a minute ago, I'm going to have my DVR. I got to go before I leave for Atlanta on Thursday morning. I'm going to go through and delete like every other TV show that my wife and my daughters have recorded. So there'll be enough space. So there'll be enough space to record like 12 games that I want to record for this weekend. But
it's important.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to getting to watch the Thursday night games in Atlanta over at my buddy Bobby's house. That's going to be hosting me for this trip. So you guys in Atlanta, I'll see you this weekend, and John will see you in Auburn this weekend. And then I'll see you in Auburn next weekend for Arkansas State. So, be sure to check out, send us messages on Twitter. We want to hear your questions. Once the season gets going, we're going to be doing a show every week, and we'll be wanting to answer your questions and hear your suggestions and topics. So tweet us at Van Allen Plexico or at JK Ringer and at AU Wishbone. You can reach us at any one of those. And our email is auwishbone@gmail.com. So be sure to check us out there and at thewareaglereader.com, where our columns will be going up. And like I said, our SEC previews. So, John, it's been fun, and it's about time to kick things off. So,
yep, can't wait.
All right, War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.